Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Heron?
Yes, I was born in Brixton, actually Tulse Hill, in London, on 12th of July 1921.
And could you tell us a little about your family background?
Yes, my family for about 4 or 5 generations were theatrical. Originally, my grandparents came from Glasgow, were in the Glasgow Theatre, and they made a name for themselves in the West End. And in fact, the family travelled all over the world, and we all lived in a fascinating house in Brixton with 14 rooms, and the whole family lived in it and used to go off on tour from one way or the other. But my mother, actually, I was illegitimate, and my mother was an actress, and grandmother did in fact look after me in the early years, and finally adopted me, so my uncles became my brothers. And it was a bit of a complicated situation with the family dispersing in and out and being very theatrical all the time. But it was a very happy childhood, strangely enough.
Did you have any brothers and sisters, or
not, aside from my uncles who became my brothers?
Yes, sorry, no.
Oh, no, sorry. I had one half brother and one half sister.
But you did. They didn't live in the same house.
They didn't live in the same house. They were separate completely.
Now, what about your education? What do you remember?
Yes, I went to school I went to at the age of 7 was a boarding school called the Modern School Surbiton, which was a lousy school.
Well, is it?
Probably
what
doesn't
way?
Exist. Oh, God, terrible things happen. I mean, for example, they fed us on gorgonzola cheese. I mean, it was a private school, and they were ripping us off, actually. And they fed us gorgonzola cheese, kids at Gorgon, and they put me off cheese for life. For about a month, we were fed, and then we were given brimstone and treacle. I don't know if you've ever eaten brimstone and treacle, but it is the most horrible. The treacle adheres the brimstone, it's like, which is a bit like bad eggs, to the inside of the mouth. So you used to get a spoonful of this every day. That was just one thing, and it was a rubbish place.
What about educational standards?
Nothing particular. But finally, they found out how bad it was, my parents. Because the parents often do it in ignorance. And they sent me to a wonderful school called, which is still in existence, St. Michael's School in Otford in Kent. It's a private school, a Church of England school, and only had about 60 pupils. It was run by a priest and had nuns, and it was a wonderful school. Lots of sport, a most wonderful mansion, and now I believe there are up to 400. I've been back to it, and there are about 400 pupils now.
And what about, did you have any subjects you were particularly interested in at school?
Oh yes, I was very keen on history, but it was the school, it's the St. Michael's, was basically for professional actors' families. So their tendency was to be on the art side. I mean, I did Latin and Greek at the age of 11, and I finished there at the age of 14, and I was very far advanced on the art side, but had done no physics. I then went from there to Archbishop Tilbury.
What about the sport there? You mentioned sport.
Oh yes, well that was wonderful. I mean, we had we used to run after the horses on the hunt. We used to go rabbiting, literally with an old gamekeeper. We played cricket and we played soccer, and I loved it because I've always been very physical, and the education itself was brilliant, but of course it was lopsided. And so I finished up there going to Archbishop Tennyson's at the Oval, because I fancied that because of the cricket, and Gover was our coach at Archbishop Tennyson's. So there I got myself into all sorts of problems because I was well ahead of everybody else on the art side and way behind on physics and the science side. And strangely enough, going into the Navy and finishing up in the science side. Well, that's basically the education.
How did you manage to get the science level up then?
When I got into the Navy, yes, because I started...
What about before?
Not really, no. No.
So you never caught up?
And I never really caught up because I left school and almost went into the Navy almost immediately.
Were you qualified when you left school? Did you do any of the
I got matriculation, yes. But that was all, because I left at 16.
Now, what about hobbies outside of school and perhaps sport, you joined the Navy?
Well, I started from the age of 16. That was about a year before I ballroom dancing. I was a very keen ballroom dancer, and I still am. I dance now about twice a week, two or three times a week. And it was a great added physical attribute, you know, that helps you physically. Apart from that, I was a stamp collector in those days, and I think that's about... Oh, I played all sorts of sport, but that I wouldn't consider that to be anything else but perfectly natural.
What about events. Did you have an interest in the theatre? Your whole family seems to have been that way.
Yes, I did, but unfortunately, of course, in fact, I would have probably been in the theatre if it hadn't been for the war.
Now, how did you come to join the Navy? What triggered that, and how did you go about it?
I was getting bored with life, and I saw the wonderful poster with a great big gun with a guy sitting up, see the world, and I thought, that's for me, and it was just a crazy impulse. And my parents, of course, being my grandparents, were old and getting a bit fed up with me hanging around the place. And I wasn't exactly an angelic child at that age.
Where did you go to? You saw the poster. Where did you go to sign up? Do you remember the procedure?
Oh, I don't think I can remember it. I think I got through fairly quickly because I was pretty fit. When you've had a boarding school, life, you're not allowed to hang around much.
Do you remember what month it was? It'd be 1937, was it?
1937. I got a vague feeling, I don't know the dates, but I got a vague feeling that it was in the... I'd have to check that, I can't really...
Okay.
And I'd get masses of papers out, which I've got to try and sort out the dates.
Now, so you got into the Royal Navy, and what... As a boy, I presume?
As a boy telegraphist.
Now, where did you do your first training at?
St Vincent, at Gosport.
And what do you remember of when you got there?
Well, the first thing I remember was scrubbing my duck suit on the cold stone on the hands and knees with the scrubber and yellow soap, which wasn't a very pleasant exercise. And the fact that I was under one bigger disadvantage going as a youngster into a boy telegraphist, you know, the lowest of the low. With an Oxford accent, which coming out of a boarding school, and of course the rest of the boys were either Scousers or from all over the country with all sorts of regional accents, and I was up against it. I was fighting for the first 6 months of the time in the Navy.
They took it out of you then?
Well, yes and no. After I'd stood up for myself two or three times, it packed in, because they used to have some really antique type sport training. I mean, the boxing training was rather peculiar. They had a guy called Corporal Lenham, who was a middleweight for the Navy before the war, and he set up where you'd march in two lines, doesn't matter who, and then you turn into the guy next to you and just fight him, whether he was 6 foot six or 2 foot two. And then you'd have what they call milling, which they'd stick you in a ring, and you just punch the bloke nearest to you wherever you wanted to hit him. It was really a bit antique stuff, you know.
How did you take to boxing?
Oh, I was all right. I didn't mind it. Well, I broke my nose four times. No, I didn't mind that. Anything sporting, I was all right.
Now, let's look at the conditions you were living under. What was your accommodation like?
Accommodation was quite good. The food was never adequate.
Hang on, what were you accommodating?
Dormitories. With
barracks or
barracks basically, large rooms, maybe 30 or 40 feet long and about 20 feet wide, something like that, 20-25 feet wide.
And was it a bed or a hammock?
A bed, a steel bed. It wasn't anything palatial, believe you me. I mean, it was very basic, but on the other hand, I'd been used to boarding school, so that didn't worry me at all.
Did you have a space to put your personal possessions?
Yes, we had a little stand by the bed for your personal, and then you could keep, you had a locker as well available, which you could keep any personal stuff locked up. Apart from that, is there anything else?
Your uniform? I missed that, I should have asked. What uniform were you out with?
Well, I used bell-bottom, the normal bell-bottom thing with a lanyard and the standard naval uniform of the day.
Did you get more than one?
We had two, and we could always get one made, a sort of number, I've forgotten what they call it, number six suit, I think it was, the posh one. You can always get made by local naval tailors, which I did too at that time. But the pay was ridiculous. I think we got 6 shillings a week. And of that, we were given a shilling and allowed to go out down to Gosport for one day, one afternoon a week. And we used to rush down to Gosport, buy ourselves a packet of fags with 3 crayol in it. I remember. 3 crayol cigarettes and a bun and a cup of tea and 6 pennies for movies. We'd go into the movies for 6 pennies. So it wasn't exactly, it was a pretty austere existence.
Now, what about a typical day? If we look at a typical day's training, we'll pick up all the other things out. About what time did you start in the morning?
We started about 6 o'clock. And we do this sort of scrubbing out routine of our clothes and stuff and cleaning out generally.
How strict was that? I mean,
very strict, very strict. I mean, you stuck to the letter of the law, or else. And although I don't think they were unkind, I don't mean that.
No, I meant the cleaning. I mean, was your work inspected? Did they?
Yes. The fellow would come round and do this sort of thing. Or everywhere, running their hands all over the furniture and stuff to make sure you cleaned it all.
So after that, what next?
Then the next thing was we would go on parade and do half an hour or an hour, I can't remember which.
Before breakfast then?
Breakfast would be next.
Now, you wanted to talk about the food. Let's talk about all the food in one where we've got breakfast. What did you think of the food then?
I thought it was pretty basic and pretty horrible. Not even that, because let's face it, I mean, there's one thing I must tell you, which was the cocoa. We had cocoa the first thing in the morning. After we'd done the scrubbing out, we had cocoa and a biscuit. Now, the cocoa was made in bars, and when they scraped it off, it went in, and then they'd add hot water. And there was oil floating on that. It was really a basic, but it was hot. And when the cold winter mornings, when you've been scrubbing out, a hot chocolate was a very welcome thing. But it was very, very basic.
And what would you get, say, for breakfast or lunch?
Oh, well, wait a minute. That was the coke, I must tell you.
Okay.
The next thing was a dog, one thing like a dog biscuit. So we had cocoa and a dog biscuit for a warmer upper. and then followed by breakfast, which was something like porridge and an egg or a bit of bacon or a sausage or whatever. It wasn't too bad. I mean, I'd been used to boarding school food anyway, so it was nothing was very... Everything was acceptable.
What about lunch? Dinner, whichever way you look at it.
Yes, it was called... I think it was called dinner in those days, because we had dinner and supper. But I can't really... I always remember one thing, that we used to love the spotted dicks. They used to have these big rolls of spotted dicks, and they'd cut it up in slices, and then they'd put it and pass it down the mess deck, which had maybe 10 guys either side. And as it went down, the guys would put a fork in it and then stick it in under the table, so that when it got to the other end, there were two or three people missing slices of spotted dick. So the guy would come along and sort it. And as soon as you'd got your second portion, you'd unfork it, eat that, and unfork it from underneath and eat. We were always starving.
You didn't get enough then?
Not really. I mean, for growing lads, I mean, we were all in our 17s, 16, 17 and 18. That was one of the bad things about it. I think we never got enough food. But then what is enough for a young kid like that? Perhaps it was to save us getting fat. I don't know.
Now, after breakfast, you presumably start training sessions.
We start training
Perhaps
sessions.
Perhaps if we have a look at, I mean, drill, basic foot drill.
That's the first thing. We used to do half an hour to an hour. Don't forget, we were telegraphists and we were not in any gunnery section, so our training was mostly of the basic Morse codes.
You take to basic drill?
Okay, except in winter time, it was pretty ferocious, because the GI who took us used to come round and, if you know, holding your arm up at the right angle, if you weren't doing, he'd wrap you on the knuckles with a bayonet or something like that. That wasn't too pleasant, but again, we were young, it did nothing.
Did you understand the point of drill? I mean, why you had to spend time doing it?
Yes, I think we did.
What was it?
Well, it was just imparting discipline, basically. That's what it is. I mean, all drilling is discipline. The fact that the Matlows never were very good at marching around anyway, so we never took it that seriously. But certainly the attitude was that we knew we were being disciplined. And those that had any intelligence, some of them were a bit thick, but the telegraphists on the whole were a more... select bunch. We'd been selected for that reason.
What about the PT? Did you do much PT? You mentioned the milling, the boxing, but yeah. What other physical training did you have?
Start. First of all, can I mention swimming first? That was the funniest thing, was that I couldn't swim when I went there. So what they did, they threw me in with half a dozen others, and they'd stick a pole about 2 feet away from you, and you'd strike out for it, and then they'd pull it away again, and they'd strike, you'd strike out, and in 5-10 minutes you'd find you were swimming or drowning, which was the easiest. And there were one or two guys there that were really scared stiff, because they had fear of water, you know, that happens. And there was some pretty hectic times on that. Anyway, that was one form. Another favourite one was they had a 125-foot mast at St Vincent. And they used to put us at we used to race over the masts. That was up the... if I can remember the names. Up the Rattlings, over the Devil's Elbow, and then up the Jacob's Ladder to the top. And you had one lot going up one side and one lot coming down the other. So, and then you get up to the top boom. And during then part of that was that they'd give a demonstration.
Yes.
Gives a demonstration. The most able of the climbers of the mast would go to the ball at the top of the mast and wrap his legs around the ball and lean out backwards, and they'd have people at all the various levels of the mast. doing all sorts of fancy things. You know, that was for visiting plenipotentiaries who wanted to see something spectacular.
How did you take to mass drill? I mean, were you nervous of heights, or did you just get used to it all?
No, I've never been nervous of heights. Fortunately, if I had been, God, there was one guy who fell off the mast, and unfortunately hit the... There's a netting at the bottom level, but he missed. Well, didn't miss it, but he bounced off it onto the deck. And I think he broke a couple of legs, although he was pretty badly knocked about. The next thing...
As a PT, what about...
I've got a yard of it. Yards of it.
There you are.
One of the main demonstrations things we did, and we spent weeks and months, was field gun. The same you see at Olympia. But we did it with a smaller gun, and with one guy holding the barrel and removing the wheels and doing the thing, and everybody has seen at some time or other at Olympia. We had that training in that, and we used to compete with Chatham, which was, what was the name of the... I've forgotten the name of the Chatham boys' school, boys' training. But apart from that, was a big training.
Did you see the point in the field gun?
Not really. I mean, we had all sorts of disasters, you know, because kids chopped fingers off and did all sorts of things. And it really was a bit pointless.
Did you all have to do that?
No. It was those that were most physically capable, I suppose, really.
And were you on it?
I was on it, unfortunately.
And what about orthodox PT, you know, the sort of...
We did very little of that. We did very little. We did some, but mostly, and then there was the main thing which we did.
Hang on, route marches, do those?
No. Oh, no, what we did was, instead of route marches, we'd run down from St. Vincent down to the Gosport Hard, and there we'd get out a 12-oar cutter, and we'd pull round the harbour, Portsmouth Harbour, for about 2 hours. And after you've done that, you think your back's breaking in two. You know? So that was instead of running around the countryside. We did have paper chases and things like that.
I'll come back to that. The cutter work, had you been trained, you know, in how to use a cutter or a whale?
We were initially, because, of course, this was our first time ever. It was mine, certainly. I'd never rowed anything before. And... you get a single oar, of course, in these cutters. It's 12 oars, six either side, with 12 buoys on it. And you didn't quite have a GI or a PTI. It would be a physical training instructor who would be standing over you with what they called a stonicky. And the stonicky was a piece of leather, a leather length, that's wrapped in canvas. And they'd use that if they felt the boys weren't doing their stuff. And perhaps this is not altogether an exaggeration, because what used to happen, if you weren't going over the mast, for example, fast enough, the PTI would be chasing you up and whacking your backside with a stonicky to make sure you got over. But I don't think it did any of us, apart from the odd accident, I don't think it did any of us any harm. And we were certainly so physically fit, it was unbelievable. But that was just for the daytime.
Yeah. Did you do any weapons drill?
Not really.
Or training?
Yes. We did our main training, of course, which was Morse codes, all the telegraphist requirements. That was done...
Tell me how this started out, then. What did you start with?
We started slowly learning... the Morse code. I think that was the main thing.
Now, had you known it beforehand? Because some boys did know it, you know, from...
Boy Scout. Yeah, no. No, I didn't have any knowledge at all.
So how did they teach you? It's not easy, is it?
Well, it didn't seem... I can't remember, to be honest, how easy or how... But it didn't seem to register with me that it was a problem. And I still can read it to about 25, 30 words a minute, even now. You never forget it.
What was the method of learning? I mean...
Well, I think they just set up... If I remember, there was a chart, and you just started slowly by doing simple say figures first, or A, B, da, 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 you know, just simply gradually gaining speed. The point wasn't so much as learning it, because it became almost second nature after a while. And you just slowly built up, because it's very simple when it's slow. And so then they'd intersperse with the basic Morse code, they'd intersperse with flags, you know, A, B, C, what do they call it? I've forgotten the name for it now.
Semaphore flags.
Semaphore flags, yeah. And of course, then there's the Morse code, there's another one, which is the...
The Morse flags.
Morse flags, yeah. That's my memory in that respect of some names is getting a bit vague, so you'll have to excuse me from time to time.
What made a good Morse code operative then? Because some people can do it and some people can't. Some people find it like music almost, you know, they can sort of hear it.
I think it's a bit like dancing. Some people have it and some people don't. Although, eventually, it just meant the time it takes for certain people to achieve a good standard, other people didn't do so well. It took longer. I mean, that's all it was. I mean, they made sure that in the end, you all learnt to do Morse code.
Would people drop out?
I can't remember anybody ever dropping out in the class I was in, but, you know, I can't say for the whole of the training. But certainly, it was very minimal. The attention to detail and the pressure you were under made bloody sure that you learned to do it.
Now you've got the Morse code and the flags. Yeah. What else were you learning?
The basic electronics.
Now, how did they? Was that lesson work?
That was lesson work, yes.
And how far up the chain of electronics did you get? You know, because it's
yeah. Well, it was very basic. I mean, as you see, in those days, the electronics was very basic. I mean, I subsequently got a degree, and I mean, when I left the Navy. But, I mean, at that time, it was very basic. I mean,
the very
equipment. Well, I would say it's up to sitting guilds sort of standard, very simple sitting guilds 1 or 2 standard, which is knowing the basic electrical supplies, 2 sets, what about frequencies, kilocycles, megacycles, all this sort of stuff, all basic stuff. No, to an average engineer, I mean, it's very basic. But we learnt a lot subsequently when we got on board.
Oh, yes, sir, we'll come to. So what else were you doing? You got your electrical training, your Morse code, what else?
I can't remember what else. Oh, the naval rules and regulations, of course, the standard stuff. We had to learn, about... what was Jankers and what was all the naval regulations and legal.
I was thinking more the telegraphers. I mean, were you introduced to wirelesses or radar or anything like that?
Oh, no,
I mean, radar wasn't there really, was it?
No, and even as I was saying, the radio part of it was very simple. I mean, a spark transmitter is a very simple operation, and you learned. Learnt about the Admiralty communication system across the world, because of course we had wireless stations at every major part of the world, and we had to learn about that and the communications therein, you know, how it was operated. What else? I can't think of any other. I mean, for 18 months. Do you know, I can't for the life of me think what the hell I was learning in those 18 months.
I'm surprised you didn't have any rifle learning, you didn't learn to shoot.
No,
none of that.
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I'm glad you reminded me. We were, you see, we never carried rifles, mostly in... Was it there that I learnt to shoot with a revolver? because we carried a revolver and a pack backpack, wireless on the, as a backpack. But that was much later. I don't think.
So you didn't do it there.
No. Did I do any shooting? I don't think I did any. It was very basic. Because there was quite a lot to learn.